Hey guys, so we've reached episode 4, and this is what I like to call the credibility episode. This is where it's not just us talking at each other in a microphone. We're bringing in an actual expert. We're bringing in a professor of marketing, a social media expert, to really help us answer some of these questions, to really help us dig into like trends and how these platforms work. So this is going to be, I think, a really informative and helpful episode, I think, for a lot of us.
Yeah.
It's not just opinions.
It's very data driven, right? It's like we had to bring someone in that knows this subject and knows the trends and especially can identify how fast they're changing. Emi Moriuchi is our guest on this one, and we met her through a connection through my school, and she's this incredible professor of social media and marketing and has the data, knows how it's changing and shifting, and offers us some really good things just to know. I think there were two or three little nuggets in here that were so surprising for me, and it's changed maybe even the way I'm starting to deliver social media and talk on social media. So I think it was a great one to kind of mix in, because as fun as we can be with this, we do need to have some facts.
Yeah, right? That's right. So everyone grab a pen, grab your notepad, and really dig into this one, because she's got a lot of really helpful tips and tricks. And honestly, like, I look at my analytics a little bit differently after having gone through this conversation.
Yeah, and we also put in about 5 or 6 links to things that she mentions in the show. So when you do hear something from the episode, go to our links. We put just about every great little resource and freebie that she has talked about on there. I've already bookmarked them for mine. I think they're fantastic to use. So again, let us know if there's anything that unique or interesting that was kind of a standout for you on this one that we should really share, maybe even make more comments and post on. Definitely throw it out there on our Instagram. We're at CreativeCourseP. Feel free to leave a note there and we'll do our best to get back to you.
All right. Hope you enjoy.
Okay, so we are back on our social media course, and yes. One thing Jordan and I will never claim to be is experts at social media. we dabble in it, we try, we have success, we love it, we're really excited about talking about it with this course, but we wanted to reach out to someone that could help us out with not only more on the expert side of what's happening with social media and what we should be doing with our profiles and with our businesses and as designers. So I wanted to reach out, and I found a good friend of mine that came to my class, I think it was about 2 years ago via Skype, and we want to introduce Emi Moriuchi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Thanks for coming. We're doing great, and thank you so much for being a part of this, because I think, when we first thought about doing this, I think a lot of people want to claim they know what they're doing, but it changes so often with social media, right? And I'm sure you've got to, like, reintroduce or relook at your findings all the time too, because of this vast thing of social media, huh?
Right, exactly. It's changing so fast, and when I'm teaching it, sometimes there's some classes that you can just reuse the material over and over again. You can do that with social media or any type of digital marketing.
Yeah. Give our listeners just a bit. I know your background, but I'd love for you to tell them a little bit about what you do, where you are, and what you're specializing in. And plug your book if you want to.
Oh, yeah, cool. Okay, my name is Emi Moriuchi. I have a PhD in marketing from the University of Manchester in England. Currently, I'm an assistant professor at Rochester Institute of Technology in RIT. It's a very techie school, so our business program is geared towards a lot of hands-on, and we integrate a lot of technology usage within the marketing program as well. What I teach currently is we call internet marketing, but some other schools, they will call it as digital marketing. Mm-hmm. And it encompasses all different types of marketing activities that are online. So it includes not only just the website, social media, but also the e-commerce, social commerce, email marketing, all those kinds of stuff. And then I also teach a social media marketing class. And yes, I do use my book. Social media marketing strategies in utilizing consumer generated content. So I'm writing a second edition of this book, and it's gonna come out probably next year.
Great.
This book is focused mainly on consumer generated content, and we probably know a lot about consumer generated content, and sometimes people call it CGC or UGC, user generated content. And the difference I see is just one, it's user, you know, mm-hmm. they go online, they consume the information. Consumer generated content is geared towards people who actually purchase products. And okay. We are actually all consumers, if you think about it. We consume a lot of products. And so some of my students do ask me, so, what is the distinct difference here? Then I would say, okay, if say, for example, I bought the product for you, for Nick, and Nick didn't buy anything, but he actually used that. So he could be a user, but not a consumer per se, because he didn't really buy the product, but he can also be a consumer because he consumed that product.
Got it.
So the experience would be slightly different when we talk about the person actually buying the stuff, because there's this whole process about looking for the information, communicating with the seller, and all those stuff that is considered an experience too. And that would add on towards, the product quality. So a lot of the time, if you read reviews, they will complain not about the product, but about the experience they have dealing with the seller. Yeah.
That's me. Yeah. And how crazy to hear how much it's changing and how fast that stuff is changing, because mm-hmm. the levels and the layers of how we do consume things, and we're all on social media, and that's where we're shopping now and doing all this stuff. So it's fascinating how different it's all being kind of generated and looked at. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So for today, we asked Emmy to kind of come back to us with some tips, some tricks, some trends as far as the latest and greatest things that we're seeing there on social media, geared towards our listeners who are hoping to build their own brands there, hoping to encourage people to link into them for potential projects or clientele. And then at the end, we're going to kind of give Emmy a few questions that we've got from our listeners that will hopefully be a little more direct and kind of pinpoint some of the things that people are talking about. So with that, take it away. Where do you want to start? We're curious.
Okay. I think I can start with there are many trends, right? So I'm just going to keep it short, and I'll just say, let's talk about the top five trends.
Good.
In social media.
Because you could probably talk an hour for each one, right?
Yeah. And they're current, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's more important.
So, exactly. You know, things change so fast. And sometimes when you talk about it, and then your students was like, did you know that? I said, okay.
now they'll say, I heard that on the Creative Course podcast. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, one of the big thing was, social media, we have to first distinguish social media. So social media come in all different forms, and normally, for whatever reason, people think social media equal social networking sites. And that's not always true, because social media, you can include community forums, review sites, all those third-party websites, blogs. Those are considered social media. And if you dig deeper, then you will look at the social networking sites, because if you do think about it, the activity that's going on for each platform is different, and that's why they are called, for Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, what have you, are all called social networking sites. And there's this recent, Pinterest was actually the first social networking site that allows buyable pins. Mm-hmm. So you can shop on social networking sites, and therefore calling it social shopping, social commerce.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So back then it was just e-commerce, right? You go on Amazon and what have you. And then Amazon start to say, we want to be more social too. So what they did was they introduced that Q&A section, whereby you ask a question and the customers who bought it before would help answer that question. So it's like a back and forth that I do see that a lot, but I do realize that some of the answers are not really relating to the product. The reason is because when Amazon sends out that message to say me, when I bought that product, it didn't say specifically that it would go up to this so-called forum or the Q&A section. So if you're new to that, you probably get you'll be surprised when you see those whole list of questions. Oh my God, my answer is right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They figured it out. Yeah.
I know, exactly. So that, if you think about what social media, social networking sites, the purpose is to have a back and forth communication, right? And the reason for that is so that consumers reduce the risk of uncertainty. So when they buy things online, there's always an uncertainty. They don't get to touch it. They don't get to feel it, right? And if it's a new seller, not talking about Amazon, but like a third party selling on Amazon or even just eBay, you have that anxiety. So I don't know whether this is the right product. And sometimes they don't let you refund it and exchange it. So, you know, in order to reduce that risk, the uncertainty, whatever financial risk or psychological risk, in order to do that, they have that Q&A section or have people talk about it in a forum, community forums and whatnot. So that's the reviews, like let's talk about Amazon as a review site as well, or like Yelp for restaurants. Mm-hmm. They are really, really popular. And if you do look for something, and we talk about search engine optimization, that's the first thing that you probably would be looking for, you know, to again reduce that risk that you have. You don't want to be, you know, wasting your money or just make yourself more at ease.
Go ahead. I think we're probably gonna ask the same question, so go ahead.
I was sort of wondering, you know, is this why we're starting to see like a rise in influencer marketing, in terms of just like, as a consumer, if, you know, the person I watch on YouTube every day is tell me about a product and trying to get me to buy a product, I'm more likely, because it's more credible, it seems like.
Yeah.
You see just influencer marketing that connection. Now, it's like people have Instagram accounts and they're just selling products through their lives, you know what I mean? These lifestyle brands. Yeah. And it's so successful. So I'm curious if that's sort of the trend you're starting to see with the credibility and
Exactly. That's actually one of the top five trends right now.
Okay.
So one of the top five trends is influencer marketing. You have also the Instagram stories in platform messaging. You have live streaming. That's a big thing. There's also technology involved here, where you have AR, augmented reality, the face filters, you know, on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And or on Snapchat, it was actually initiated by Snapchat first, and then you have VR.
Copied by Instagram.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
Yeah, and then you have VR. I don't know how many of you are aware. Facebook have this thing called Facebook Spaces, whereby you put on the VR and then you connect with your friends virtually.
Wow!
I had no idea.
I noticed yesterday when shopping, I looked at something on Instagram, and it's like, do you want to see it in your room? And it switched to a camera, and there was this coffee mug VR on my coffee table.
That's AR.
That's AR. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of crazy. But it makes sense, because we're comfortable with it now on Instagram and all these other platforms that we're on daily. So I think it makes sense that these companies are doing it. And then I was almost going to ask you, in the reverse of that, I love where you were talking about Q&A and frequently asked questions, or all those things, open forums. So even us as independent designers, I think we can start doing, you know, we're doing that on Instagram now with Q&A. We have that area on our website that's like asks a few questions of our clients. So like, there's ways we can benefit from what they're doing too in our own small businesses.
Exactly. And so that's why I was talking, Jordan, I'm going to go back to you on the influencer marketing, but I'm going to go to Nick on that question on Q&A. So research already show that consumers are more, but they trust consumer-generated content, you know, people who have purchased it before, and then trust less on what companies have to say, because obviously you are out there to sell stuff. You will say everything all fancy and nice. You won't say anything negative about your product. So the thing with consumer-generated content is that people would trust that more So that's why there's an increase in how companies build their website with those kind of areas mm-hmm. to encourage people to contribute comments, contribute
testimonials.
Testimonials and whatnot. And another thing is that a lot of businesses, they don't realize that having negative comments is not a bad thing. Of course, out of 10, if you have 10, okay, you have to do something about it. But if you have like one or two, it's actually not a bad thing. Yeah, it's human. You know, if everything is so perfect, people will actually be more skeptical.
Interesting.
I'm one of those. I'm like, well, especially because you hear all these stories of like people buying positive Amazon reviews or whatever it is. You know what I mean? I just feel like as consumers, and this can go through everything, even into like if you're a designer listening and you're trying to gain more outreach, but it just seems like credibility is so important. And so right now, as consumers, we're always getting sold to. And so it's these people, like these little trends you're starting to see of like, well, I'd rather buy from someone I find more credible, who's just, you know, an influencer or a designer like me who's talking about a product. Whether or not they're getting paid is, you know, a different story. But in just in terms of like credibility and marketing, it seems like that's such a powerful tool nowadays that's getting utilized more and more.
So, like, a lot of companies would think, you know, the first reaction is delete that negative that negative comments, right? But then instead of deleting it, consumers actually like it when they see the companies or, you know, brands or owners addressing it.
Yeah. I think people want to see the humanity. And Nick and I talked about this a little bit in the previous episode of just, like, in this, again, it's transparency, I'm talking back to designers. But, people want to see the process. People want to see, you know, your messy sketches if you're a designer. Like, they want to see the human behind sort of the pixels, the personality behind the pixels. So I think that kind of ties in really well with that.
Yeah. And then with that, if you know, it's human psychology. People see that, oh, you care, you address the issue. If anything's bad about that product, I can kind of give you, you know, cover one eye and say, oh, I'll give you some leeway, you know, give more empathetic, more sympathetic and whatnot. So that actually goes back to what Jordan, you had about influencer marketing. So influencer marketing, there's three types of levels. One is called micro, one is macro, and there's mega. So mega is like you have millions of followers, right? And then you have the micro and the macro. So to me, it was such a irony.
irony. I like that word. It's an irony.
Delete that. Okay. So that was an irony on like how influencer marketing works, because there's a paid and so we have to distinguish first paid and non-paid influencer marketing. So social media ads, having advertisement on social media is so effective. And sometimes, and then we say, okay, we trust consumer-generated content, but then it doesn't really reach out to everybody. So you have ads on social media, so it reaches out to more people. And then so the influencer marketing comes in and say, people trust what I say because they follow me. Now I'm going to tap onto this full influencers and help them, help me promote the products, right? But if you think about it, they are being paid. So they are kind of like a paid ad. But in an influencer, right? So people don't trust ads, but they trust consumer-generated content, but they trust influencers. Right? So the influencer is, I think like you guys said about, they have that connection, they build that trust, more humanity. That's why people believe them. They are not out there to solely sell or promote a product. You know, they didn't start off as an influencer. They start off... so I always talk to my students. I said, what's the difference between an influencer and a celebrity? And so they say they were thinking about it, and most of them get it right. It's that influencer, if you think about it, anybody can be an influencer. Your parents can be an influencer in, you know, whatever decision you make. But if we talk about this buzzword on influencer, is actually it's no longer a buzzword. And then so the influencer is their birthplace is on social media. Celebrities' birthplace is mostly on traditional media, which is TV.
Entertainment.
Sports,
yeah.
Right. And so now celebrity becomes an influencer because they have the name there and then they bring it over to the social media platform site. And so they become like, you know, they dabble between two of them. And so a lot of the time when we talk about influencer, it's about people who are famous or they gain fame via social media, social networking sites. And you probably see a lot of them saying that, and one thing I think they are good at, the influencers, is that they make a story. And they are very good content creators. They create a story and then just integrate that product, the sales pitch,
naturally,
smoothly into that story, right?
I always admire that, yeah.
Yeah, it's not overwhelming. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then you just like go with the flow and then you believe the story. And I'm not saying the story is fake or whatnot, but it's really good. Like the storyline is really good.
Yeah.
And so that's, and then, but for say YouTube and whatnot, all the social networking sites, they came out with, I wouldn't say it's a law, but a policy whereby you have to disclaim that you are being sponsored for video. And then, you know, on the bottom, say FTC sponsored or whatnot. If not, your video is going to be taken off that social media platform.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. They're policing it.
I appreciate that. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
And then, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that it's interesting to hear that, because I'm like, you do, being not in that world or not understanding it, but you're seeing it. I don't feel like I can influence anybody, but when I when I read and see the people that I do know who are in that world, it's really interesting how they have to be very organic with the way it's blended in, and it can't just be so blatantly put in there. And I think it's interesting, like if you're following someone that's in video content and does that, and then their gear they're using is just there because they're showing the gear they use, that's almost the easiest way in. They're not plugging it, but it's there, and you know, oh, that's what they use, or that's the tool of their trade. So there's ways around it, which is always interesting.
Right. You know? And then even like, say, YouTubers, those influencers on YouTubers, camera, having a good camera is like an important, it's like, you know, their toolbox. So I'm not surprised that some of them actually get sponsored by Canon or those big camera companies. Say, this is the camera I use for my YouTube video. And people who are their followers will start buying products from that, buying the brand that they are actually using. And I thought it was pretty good way of reaching out. But another thing though, for influencer marketing, there was a few articles that were out there whereby hotels, they were really upset. I don't know whether the hotels themselves, on the representative on the hotel side, the hotel industry or the tourism industry, actually did their homework, because some of the articles were saying that, you know, they don't want to do influencer marketing anymore. And one of the reasons is because the influencers call and say, hey, I'm an influencer, give me a free night stay, and I'm going to promote that, you know, on a YouTube, on Instagram or whatnot. and you know, they give them the free night stay, give them the greatest hotel room, greatest view, and then they don't see any result. Like, one is that maybe they didn't even post it.
Probably not.
Yeah. And then they just use that so-called influencer, that term, to kind of, I wouldn't, like, what is the best word to say here? Like, not, kind of weird to use the word influence them, but
persuade.
They use that type. Persuade, yes, that's a great word. To say that, you know, I have so X amount of followers, you know, whatever I say works, or, you know, people follow me, people listen to me. So
it's like a weird form of currency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's how smart of them to identify that and say, like, wow, that ain't working here. Because I think they have a very quick giveaway. It could be the room and it's the accommodation. And that's so easy. Whereas other things, it would be a little harder to probably make that exchange for product. So good for them for figuring that out. And maybe I might try that next time I'm doing that. Tip number one from Emmy. No, I'm just kidding.
So, yeah. But another thing with influencer marketing is, so for any businesses that are intending to use influencer marketing, currently it's shown to be very effective in any conversion engagement with the consumers, with the audience. However, one thing to note is that you have to choose the influencer that matches with your brand.
Totally.
Right. So, for example, I could get, an actress or a singer or actor to promote, say, a laptop. That doesn't match, you know. So that credibility does make a difference in whether people would choose to buy or to even follow up with the product, to engage with the product, find out more information about a product. So those mix and match really matters a lot, not just because they have a huge number of followers, that means that they're going to be influential maybe in their type of product, maybe like a makeup or a microphone or whatnot, but not a technical product. Yeah. So it was pretty interesting to see a lot of people not to overlook the fact that you have to mix and match. Like, you have to match the brand, the product type, and the influencer, the name, the personality of the influencer.
Cool. Yeah. I totally agree. And I see some bad ones out there, so we we know. Awesome. Yeah. What's next on your list?
And next on my list is live streaming.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yes. So there is a lot of small businesses and, say, YouTubers. They do a lot of, and Instagram, Facebook, they do a lot of live streaming. That is an in thing right now. A lot of people like to have that real-time interaction. But one thing though, like, if you don't say, for example, we talk about YouTube, if you don't say subscribe to the person, then to the influencer, then you don't get a notification that, oh, the person is live.
Yes, correct. Okay.
Right. So but on, say, Facebook or whatnot, you get the notification, you know, it pops up. If you have the notification alert set to show up on your phone, then you would know that, oh, that person is live. Then you go on.
So it's almost like a forced outreach of, like, you're not, you have to subscribe. I'm going to increase my followers, because if you don't, you won't be able to interact. And that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
It's the,
but another
it's the
thing
perfect
to,
like, dangling carrot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing though is, for live streaming, first we have to see who, where your audience is living. So where do they live? Which geographical area? What time zone it is? Because when you set a live stream event, you want to make sure that majority of your audience is in the same time zone as you. Mm-hmm. Because if you are in the day, the other side is at night, they might be sleeping and they might not turn on to, you know, view your live stream.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I do see a lot of live streaming going on with people trying to do like an auction on Facebook. I see that happening. They also do like a YouTube live stream. They say, oh, I'm going to do this Q&A section. Come and talk to me on YouTube and whatnot. So I do see that a lot. And that's a growing trend right now.
Good. Does that, can someone independent or someone maybe without such a huge follower benefit from this? I mean, I know everyone, there's baby steps and everything that you might be trying to do, but to encourage someone to say, I might try this as a Q&A, or maybe talking about a recent, or showing the process off. Let's face it, creatives love to do that. So, like, what would you give them? How would you give them advice to even just start it off and take that chance to say, give it a try, at least shoot for it?
I would say, first of all, if you have a good amount of followers, then one of the things that you want to plan ahead is to have a content calendar.
Oh, okay.
So, so if, say, for example, if you are going to dabble into social media, you always have to have content, because you are a content creator. If you want to be out there, then you would create this content calendar where you say, okay, every Monday I'm going to post something, every Tuesday is going to be this. Then you say, okay, every Friday is going to be my Q&A live session. So when you have that set up, and then you when you tell your audience, say, okay, every so often, every Tuesday, I'm going to have a new video popped out. Every Friday, I'm going to have a live stream. Then people would have it scheduled in their own schedule, right? And so they know when to show up, rather than you randomly saying, oh, I'm going to have a live video stream today, and you don't get the audience that you want. So, So I think to be organized, have that schedule set up. And if you think live stream is something that you want to do, especially if you say you have behind the scenes going on, that's like live stream is on real time, is beneficial because people can see it real time. Or you can have like a Q&A, come and meet me, greet me, or something like that. Those kind of event, and not everything should be live stream. It has to depend on the type of content that you want to be talking about on the live stream. So most of the things that people do on live streaming is kind of repeating myself here, is the behind the scenes, like what's going on here.
Yeah.
Like a
sort of not that final polished product. It's like either the build towards it or interview questions or stuff like that.
Yeah, and actually people like the raw thing.
Yeah.
They feel it's, you know, it's not like made up. It's very real, very raw, and they like it. They like that authenticity.
Yeah. Well, I think it's that juxtaposition, because now everything is in its best light. It's so polished and perfect where it's like, you know, it feels so lifeless without the flaws or without the grit, you know. So I think that does make sense. I want to touch a little bit on you know, you mentioned like this content calendar and trying to stay organized. Mm-hmm. And we had a question, and I think this is a good segue to this, where it's, do you have any third-party apps or tools to sort of help you, you know, schedule your content? Or I know there's a few out there, but I don't personally use any, but I'm always curious about them.
Yeah.
And like maybe what the best steps to sort of tapping into that.
Okay, so very good question. So one of the things that I have my students do is, first of all, they do manual work. We have this Excel spreadsheet, and then they would do an overall calendar, say a month, looking for a month, and then they would have what we call a content repository, like a bank for content. You list out everything, and then the next tab in the Excel spreadsheet, you would have the specific social networking sites that you're going to post. So one of the things that I always tell them is pick the month. For example, for their project, they can pick any month they want. But every month that you pick, you want to make sure that there's some sort of event going on. Say, for example, December for us is Christmas, is big, you know.
Yeah.
In November, there's Thanksgiving. So all those kind events, all those are the events that are going on. Then your topic that are being created has to tie in with those events. Mm-hmm. So people will see the relevancy there.
Yeah.
So after they do that, I would say I introduce the Hootsuite. Mm-hmm. I use Hootsuite in my class.
Okay.
Yep, yeah. Hootsuite. They use the Hootsuite platform, and I get them certified in Hootsuite platform. That one is good because you can schedule ahead of time.
Yeah.
Can that one do all? It's been so long. I think I looked into that maybe a year or 2 years ago, and it couldn't do Instagram at the time. But can
it now?
Can.
Yes,
oh,
it can.
Fantastic. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, I think it was last year or 2 years ago they implemented. You can do it.
Okay.
Another one that is known for scheduling is called Cold Schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cold Schedule.
Cold Scheduling. Okay. Cold Schedule, another one. And I think HubSpot has one. HubSpot and Hootsuite actually have a lot of content, educational content, which I use for my class.
Cool.
So they teach you how to, you know, come up with the strategies, how to build that content calendar.